Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, my lovely listeners. Welcome back or welcome to another episode of Here for the Crack with me, Emma Neal. How are we all doing? When you're listening to this, fingers crossed, I will have landed safe and sound in Vietnam. This is a series of pre-recorded episodes I'm going to be putting out over the next few weeks. I will also be recording some episodes whilst I'm traveling. I have bought a little kind of travel-friendly mic, so I'll be able to do that and kind of keep you guys up to date, but I figured to just take the pressure off for the first few weeks, I'd do some pre-records. And also, in light of going traveling, I thought it's about time for another travel Q&A. Now, I have done one of these before, but it was probably a good year and a half ago. And I think I did one before that, actually, maybe when I very first started the podcast. So I'll try go back and find both of those episodes and leave the links to them in the description. I do apologize if there's any of the exact same questions and answers. I honestly can't for the life of me remember what I would have said in those episodes. I'm sure there will be a lot of crossovers, but I feel like, you know, I'm a year and a half older now than when I would have been talking about it then. I'm also doing a bit of a different trip, different budget, different experience, doing it with my boyfriend, all of that. So yeah, I know you guys have lots of travel related questions. So I put up a little story box on my Instagram story and I said to just ask away at any travel related questions, whether that be, you know, planning related questions, budget, even hair care, fashion while traveling, travel hacks, anything of the sorts. But yeah, this trip I'm currently on is 2 months long. We're doing 1 month in Vietnam. We're flying Dublin to Ho Chi Minh, doing 1 month there and then flying from Hanoi, which is in the north of Vietnam, to Manila, the capital of Philippines, and doing a month in the Philippines. The last time I did any kind of backpacking would have been 2 summers ago when I went to do my yoga teacher training in India, which actually ended up not really being as much of a backpacking trip as I thought it was going to be. I did talk about that at the time, but yeah, basically I didn't realize how bad rainy season was in Goa and kind of was under the impression that I'd be able to properly backpack it even in rainy season, just because I had experienced rainy season in other countries like Thailand and Indonesia, and rainy season really doesn't affect there that much. It might rain for an hour a day, but everything's still as norm. You can still go to the beaches and everything's still open and all that. But Goa rainy season was on another level and I kind of ended up, I don't know, staying inside in empty hostels the whole time. It wasn't really the most enjoyable experience. The yoga teacher training was a very enjoyable experience, but yeah, it didn't end up being the kind of backpacking trip I had envisioned it being. Not that it was going to be like traveling for long anyway, because as I said, like the teacher training was, what was it, 3 or 4 weeks? And then I had just had 10 days to kind of backpack and travel around at the end. So it was never going to be like a big 2-3 month backpacking trip anyway. But yeah, just to catch you up on things, that was kind of like the last time I did any sort of traveling. I did interrailing with my friends. Actually, you know what? Let me just give you a little bit of history in terms of like what backpacking I've done in the past. So at the end of school, me and my friends did interrailing. That was like a three and a half week trip around Europe. And that was kind of my first insight, I guess, into like traveling around like that. I think up until that point, I'd only ever just like gone on a, you know, week or 2 week long holiday in one place and not moved around at all. And I do really think that interrailing kind of sparked that love in me for traveling around. It made me think like, why? Not that going on a week or 2 week holiday is a waste or anything, because I really don't think that at all. And I think it's obviously so enjoyable to go somewhere and just chill for that amount of time. And, you know, you can go to different places every time if that's your way of wanting to travel. But I think the amount of like places and cities and experiences we were able to get in by interrailing kind of really sparked something in me that made me think, I want to do more of this. And then when I was 19, I decided to go solo traveling. So I booked it pretty last minute. I think I literally had like a month until I was going to leave, and I told my job and that was me. I was away. My parents were shitting themselves, although they didn't really let on at the time. They kind of told me that after. But yeah, I think they were trying to keep it together for me because they didn't want to scare me. Looking back on it now, I'm like, wow, I was so fearless and so kind of naive in a sense, I guess. Like, I just had no fears. People would ask me, are you not scared? Or, you know, how have you gone about this? And I was honestly just so, like, fearless and just, yeah, just ready to do whatever. Like, I barely even looked into it, you know what I mean? Well, I did. I watched YouTube videos and vlogs and stuff like that, got a bit of an idea of the kind of route I wanted to do. I think when you're that age, it is such a gift having that kind of, like, no fear energy. Don't get me wrong, I think you still need to have your wits about you to stay safe and everything, which I definitely did, but there's something so nice about, I don't know, that feeling when you're young and so careless and just so free. And I feel like you can never get that back, like, even now. And not that I'm, like, worried for our safety or anything, but I definitely don't have that same attitude. I don't think that's something you get back. Anyway, I went off on my own and did 3 months solo traveling. And then I actually ended up meeting who became, like, obviously isn't my boyfriend now, but who ended up becoming my boyfriend. I came home and was meant to start uni. Sorry, this is a longer, brief history of my traveling than anticipated, but I thought I'd catch up with everything. So ended up coming home, was meant to go to uni, but I just had the travel bug and I was like, my head is not in the right place to go to uni right now. So I flew back out to Southeast Asia. I met my boyfriend at the time in Borneo, in Malaysia. I think we did a month traveling around there. Then flew from there to Australia, did a year in Australia, and then had a 2 month backpacking trip around Thailand. I'd already been to Thailand at that point, but we kind of wanted to cover some places that we missed out the first time round. And yeah, Thailand's such an amazing country. There's so many parts to it. And I think we kind of wanted to go to some less touristy place, because obviously the first time you're going to the most touristy places and, you know, all the highlights that come up on the internet when you're looking it up. And then second time around, it was really nice to go and spend more time in places that I'd enjoyed the first time, and then also kind of explore some not quite as touristy places. So after that 2 month trip, I flew home. I had the Philippines booked for the March that COVID happened. Then obviously COVID happened, that got cancelled. I started uni, did uni for 3 years. Did do the yoga teacher training, went to India in one of my uni summers. But now this is like my first time actually properly backpacking again, I would say, since I was, what age would I have been when I came home from that last trip in Thailand? Maybe 21? Yeah, 21. And I'm now 25. So Philippines has just, ever since that trip got cancelled back in March of, I don't know what year that was, whatever year it was that COVID happened, ever since that got cancelled, I have wanted to make that happen. And I always knew that that wouldn't happen while I was at uni, just because of when peak season is in the Philippines. It wouldn't line up with university summers. So I kind of always knew that 2024 was going to be the year I go to the Philippines, and finally it has come and I couldn't be more excited. I also had always said that I wanted to go back to Vietnam, because on my first trip that I did solo traveling, I kind of fucked up my visa for Vietnam. Basically, when you have a UK passport, you can get like a free 30-day visa on arrival, but it requires like going through the official, you can do it online and you can pre-apply for it, or you can wait till you're at the airport and you can like do it with the officials at the airport. So I was relying on doing that, but then it ended up being a public holiday on the day that I arrived in Vietnam and I had no idea. So I had no other option but to just take the free 2-week visa that you don't have to like fill in stuff for, you just kind of get automatically with your passport. And it was just a bit complicated to try and, like, it is doable to up it to the 30 days. It definitely is. But it would have involved giving my passport to someone and then them to bring it somewhere, or else me traveling quite far to officials to do it myself. And I just, you know, when you're 19 and you've just arrived, I think it was my first place, and you've just arrived there, and like the thought of handing your passport over to someone or having to take a few days out of your kind of pre-planned route just to get more days on your visa, I was just, at the time, I was like, no, I'm not doing this. So I stuck with the 2-week visa, and I've always said I want to go back to Vietnam and do all the places that I didn't get the chance to go to. Which brings us to today, traveling a month in Vietnam and then a month in the Philippines. Okay, so with all that being said, it's time to answer your travel-related questions. Safety tips as a solo female traveler, staying in hostels and backpacking. The first thing that springs to mind for me is that there's safety in numbers. I think the best thing you can, this is the thing, people always think of solo traveling as like always being on your own. And the reality is that you're actually never on your own. Like, yeah, from time to time, if you're on maybe a more beachy place and you just take like a chill beach day to yourself, or you decide like you want to get surf lessons on your own, or you want to go to a waterfall on your own, there is the odd time you are on your own. I would say the majority of your time, though, you do spend with other solo travelers. And I think the best thing you can do is stay in social hostels and make friends so you can do things with other people. Now, there's no obligation to stick with these people and to travel with them after, or to make plans with them the next day, or even to go out with them that night. Like, you can literally just kind of form a little group to go and do your tour on that day, or go and see the temple or the site that you want to see, and that be it. And you don't even really need, like, sometimes you'll get on so well with the people, and other times it's just a little travel companion and someone that, you know, is kind of on the same wavelength as you that you can rely a little bit on for safety in that sense. And I don't mean in the sense of that they'll protect you, I literally just mean in the sense of like safety in numbers. I tended to prefer staying in female only dorms. I don't even think that's much of a safety thing, but more just like a comfort thing where, you know, when you're getting ready and stuff, it's just a bit less awkward. I don't know, I just kind of like an all-female environment for things like that, and just like with the bathroom situation and all that. I would say also always know where you're staying, always know your hostel name and the address and how to get back to it from wherever you are in case you ever do end up on your own. Another thing, which might sound stupid, but is honestly just like fake it till you make it in terms of confidence. Like, if you're wandering around on your own looking like a little lost puppy, you automatically just do look vulnerable. And sometimes you just have to pretend like you know your shit. I think also just being a little bit more cautious as to not putting yourself in potentially dangerous or vulnerable situations. So not drinking as much, making sure you'll never be on your own when it's dark and you have to get home. Just like guarding your valuables with your life, honestly. Not wearing like flashy things or lots of jewelry that'll maybe make you more of a target. I mean, it's annoying that we have to do these things, but you'd rather just do them and feel safer for it. Okay, so someone has asked, how to save while still living the life you want to in the meantime. I think that this is a case of determining what genuinely brings you happiness and like pleasure that you couldn't live without on a day, not that you couldn't live without, but that would really affect you if you didn't have it on a day-to-day basis, versus what is an unnecessary luxury. So for example, maybe you buy coffee out every day, and actually buying coffee out isn't that essential, but drinking the coffee is essential, so you could just make your own coffee and bring it in a flask. But then for someone else, it might be no, the act of going to the coffee shop and the interaction with the baristas and maybe the person that they meet at lunchtime in the cafe every day or every week is all part of it. So that's an essential for them. So you kind of have to like work out yourself what is actually like essential for you on a day-to-day basis and really kind of adds to your life and benefits your mental health and your physical health, versus what is actually just an unnecessary luxury, like say getting your nails done. You don't have to get, well, but then some people would argue that they do and that makes them feel good. I don't know. For me, for example, like an unnecessary thing would be getting my nails done, whereas a necessary thing, expense that I'm still gonna have to pay for even when I'm saving, is getting my hair done. Do you know what I mean? I feel like it looks different to every person, and it will also vary depending on how much you need to save and how much time you have and how much income you're making, because you might get someone that's, for example, like, see, when I was saving for my first trip that I did when I was 19, I was on a minimum wage job. Now, I was living with my parents, so I didn't have the expense of like rent and bills and things like that. I didn't even really have the expense of food or anything because my mum would have been doing the food shopping. So although I was on a minimum wage job, I didn't have as many expenses. However, I still had to save quite a lot of money in a short amount of time and wasn't making that much money. So in that case, I had to cut back my expenses big time and I deemed everything as unnecessary. Do you know what I mean? Whereas now I'm like, oh, but for me, like going to my yoga classes is still necessary for me, and a way I can cut back is not going out for food so often. So this will just like depend on person to person. And I think you kind of need to sit down with yourself and maybe make a list of, try and track your expenses over the course of a week and see where your money is going, where you're not realizing where it's going, and then determine what's essential, what's not. If something is essential, can it be cut down even minorly, or can it be changed to something else that's a little bit cheaper, and just kind of work it like that. How do you bring all your products with you as a curly haired gal? It's such a struggle. Boy, do I know it's a struggle. Oh my God. So my go-to for when I'm away for longer than a week when it comes to my hair is to pick two products. Now that is a huge deal for me because when I say my curl routine is about, I want to say 6 to 8 products in there. I know it's extensive, but it's just what I've worked out and it's what I do and it's what makes my curls look good. So the thought of cutting that down to 2, oh God, don't even talk to me about it. But I think it's good to just try and stick to having one moisturizing product. So for me, that would be like a leave-in conditioner or a hair balm or something along those lines. And then the second product would be a like a styling gel or like a mousse or a, you know, one that like holds your curls in place. So you've got your hydration and then you've got your styling product. So yeah, I would tend to opt for a leave-in conditioner and then like my Umberto Giannini curl jelly. But so if you're a mousse girl, you maybe, well, I'm a mousse girl and a curl jelly girl, but I cut it down to just the curl jelly. But yeah, yours might be like a mousse or one of those like sticky curl creams or something. And then actually, because I will usually have like a face oil of some sort. And a lot of the times the face oils, you can just double up as being a hair oil as well. So you kind of get 3 products in there. It's not ideal, but it's better than nothing. Are you worried about traveling with your boyfriend? Obviously, you guys are perfect together, but still quite a new thing. I love all my friends, but I don't know if I could go traveling with all of them. Yeah, this is a really good question. I don't think I have any friends I could travel with, to be completely honest. And that's not on my friends. That's like more on me as a person. I'm very, what's the word? I think that it takes great skill to go traveling with one friend because it's a lot of pressure when there's just 2 people to like always be in a good mood or, you know, to always be in good form. And it's just very intense. Like most friendships don't spend that amount of time together. And then to be put in the scenario where, you know, it's really intense. You're having every meal together. You're sleeping in the same room together all the time. I think it's a lot on any friendship. Whereas I think relationships, you do generally like spend more time together and also just kind of be in those scenarios more, like those not uncomfortable scenarios, I don't know, those kind of like down times, you do tend to do that with your partner anyway. Whereas I feel like with friendships, it's a very different dynamic. And the thing is as well about going away with just one friend, like at least if it was a group of friends, like if you want to go off on your own, it's fine to do so. Like I remember when we were interrailing, I would do that so much. I feel like I need my alone time and I need my time to recharge. So I really liked that it was a group of people because there was no pressure on me to always be with that group of people because they had each other. And this was a big thing for me actually, was because I at the time was quite an early riser and I'd be waking up early and then I'd be ready. And by the time I was ready, no one else was really out of bed. And like, if I was to, in that scenario, hang around and kind of wait for everyone, and then eventually maybe like an hour or 2 later after everyone faffing, they got out the door and I went with them, I'd be so angry. And not that it's any of their fault, but that's just me. That's who I am. I know I would hold a lot of like, not resentment, but you know what I mean? I'd just be a bit pissy all day. And that was the great thing, is that I, when I was ready, I could just go off on my own and I'd do a walking tour and then they'd all text me and be like, oh, we're up now. And I'd be like, amazing, I've literally got a walking tour in the time that you guys have been sleeping. And that meant that I was in a good mood. Whereas I feel like when you're traveling as a two, it's very different and there's so much pressure to always be together. And especially if one person is more of a planner than the other, which kind of tends to always happen. Like there usually is someone that takes a bit of a backseat and someone that is more of a planner. And I think that in itself can also create a lot of tension. So to be honest, I'm not surprised that you can't really imagine yourself traveling with any of your friends, because I can't really imagine myself doing it either. But I think relationships are different. And I also do think that traveling with a partner can make or break you. I know in my head and my heart, like 100%, that me and my boyfriend will have like the most amazing time away traveling together. Does that mean that I don't think we'll encounter our difficulties? No, absolutely not. Of course, we're going to, as anyone does that's traveling with another person. But just the way we communicate and how we plan and how two-sided everything is, I have no doubt in my mind that we'll be amazing together on this. Sorry to sound corny, but yeah. Packing. Are you bringing a backpack or suitcase? Any packing hacks that will help me? I'm bringing a backpack. I will have my bigger backpack on my back and my smaller one on my front, which obviously will go on my back when, like, for after we've checked in the bag and stuff. But yeah, in general, that's kind of how you carry them, like the big one on your back and the small one on your front. There's actually no reason why you couldn't bring a suitcase in some places. Definitely not Southeast Asia, though. Just because you're getting on too many, like, wee dinky boats and then maybe walking along the beach to your accommodation or up Grubble. And, like, there's just times I'm like, no, you actually couldn't have a suitcase here. But I know, for example, people that took a suitcase when we interrailed, or I took a suitcase when I did Australia, which was so fine. Like, you literally never, actually, if anything, I thought, I'm so happy I brought a suitcase. So I think this does depend on where you're going, but definitely a backpack for Southeast Asia. I will just say, whatever you think you need, honestly, half it. I learned that the first time, and I learned it the hard way, because I brought everything and my bag was so heavy, and shock horror, I didn't use half of it. So then ever since then, I've been quite good at packing and keeping things to, I'm not going to say a minimum, because I still don't think I'm a minimalist packer, but I'm definitely better than that first trip. So yeah, take whatever you're trying to pack and just half it in size, and you'll appreciate having a bit of space, and you can, you know, do a bit of shopping in the markets and all of that. I'd say some hacks, some packing hacks. First of all, packing cubes for sure. They're so good, especially if you're in hostels and you, because it's different if you're doing like private rooms, which me and my boyfriend probably will be doing mostly on this trip. But if you're in dorms, you don't have the floor space to be like fully opening your bag and taking everything out and like making a mess. Like, that's other people's space. So if you have it all in cubes and you can just like take out the nice little cubes and set them on your bed, take whatever it is you need out and put them neatly back in your bag, it just makes your life so much easier. Check out the Antler cubes. They're really good. And the, is it Newer? No, that's the name of a lighting brand. Near, N-E-R-E. They do suitcases and packing cubes. And then the other one is Antler, A-N-T-L-E-R. I've got packing cubes from both of those places and they're really good and really sturdy. It's good to have a mix of sizes, you know, so you can have like one for all your bottoms, one for all your wee vest tops, one for your swimwear, one for your underwear. Like, I try and keep everything really separate so I just know exactly where things are. I think a big hack is to only bring two pairs of shoes. Now, this is a hard one because you obviously need both pairs of shoes then to be multifunctional and go with everything. You need a trainer that is not only going to be good for wearing and walking in all day, because you want to be able to wear it if you're walking around all day in cities, but you also want to be able to wear it if you're walking up volcanoes. Do you know what I mean? You need that trainer to be good in every instance, but you also don't want it to be an ugly trainer that doesn't look good with your outfits. So finding that perfect trainer, it's difficult. I'll give you that. But that's my biggest tip, is to just go with the one trainer, because trainers are so bulky. So pick your trainer, and then I would say pick one pair of sandals. The go-to, realistically, for everyone's always Birkenstocks, isn't it? And it's for a good reason. I mean, they're not the best looking sandals. They do give Jesus, but they're casual enough that you can just wear them every day, you know, with your denim shorts to the beach. And they're also like not offensive to then wear at nighttime with a wee skirt or dress or something. So yeah, just, it doesn't have to be Birkenstocks, obviously, but I think like a good all-rounder sandal and a good all-rounder trainer is the way forward. I think if you do want another kind of like slider flip-flop kind of shoe so that you can wear it on things like boats, or even if you want to wear it in communal showers and things in hostels, I know people do that, then I would say just definitely stick to flip-flops, because they literally are like no weight and can just be like shoved in the bottom of your bag. They're not bulky at all, whereas some sliders are really bulky. I would love to bring my sliders, don't get me wrong, I love my, I've got like the big chunky Adidas Adelette sliders and I'm obsessed with them, and I would honestly love to be bringing them, they go with every outfit, but they're just so bulky, I don't think it's that necessary. I'm trying to think of any other packing hacks I can think of off the top of my head. Oh, actually, you know what's a good one? Lush shampoo bars and conditioner bars. See those little mini bottles, like the travel-friendly bottles of shampoo and conditioner? They're great for a weekend away somewhere. They're terrible for a long-term traveling trip. Those bottles, honestly, they'll do me for two washes, if even. There's really not a lot of product in it. I mean, maybe if you have much shorter, thinner hair, you'd get longer out of them. But for me personally, they honestly do me for about two washes. Whereas the Lush shampoo and conditioner bars, I'm not joking you, I'll buy new ones of them before going, and I'll come back and they'll not even look like they've been half used. They last you so, so long. And they're so much lighter than bringing like a full-size bottle of shampoo and conditioner. And they're just way handier, I think. Take up so much less space in your wash bag and everything. Like if I was to put in a full bottle of shampoo and conditioner and that, I'd have no space for anything else. But then if I brought the mini one, it wouldn't last me long and I'd have to buy one out there, and I wouldn't like the shampoo and conditioner because I'm quite fussy about what I use, whereas I really like the Lush ones. So yeah, that's a little hack. Oh, another hack is to get one of those wash bags that you hang up, if you know what I'm talking about, the ones that kind of unfold. And you can hang them over a door or on a little hook. And they've got like three compartments, which is really handy because I tend to find with wash bags, they're usually just one big wash bag. Whereas this is nice to be able to split things up and have like the top little mini section with any medicines like antihistamines, ibuprofen, paracetamol, rehydration sachets, your vitamins, all that. And then kind of like the one down from that being like my kind of morning and night section. So like my toothbrush, my toothpaste, my cleanser, moisturizer, SPF. And then the one down from that is like my hair wash section, or my shower section with my shampoo and conditioner, my hair styling products, my razor. Do you know what I mean? I think it's nice to separate them out like that, as opposed to having to rummage through one big giant wash bag every time you need something and like pulling it all out and be like, ah, I've lost something. And then, you know, it's just a lot easier to see it when it's all separated like that. I'll probably do a video on TikTok. Oh, well, actually, I did do a video on TikTok showing that hack, I think, before I went to India. But I'll probably do it again on that and any other little travel hacks I can think of. Oh, actually, okay, another little packing hack. So you know the way when you're packing for, say, like a weekend or a week away, and you tend to think of, like, you kind of plan how you're packing in terms of outfits. Like, you think of your clothes in terms of outfits and you think, okay, this is an outfit for day one and this is an outfit for night three. You know what I mean? You have all these outfits planned out in your head. Do not think like that for traveling. You want every single thing that you pack to be versatile. You want every top that you have with you to pretty much go with every bottom you have with you, and likewise you want every pair of shorts or skirts or whatever it is that you have bottom wise, you want all of them to go with the tops. And you know, for like the dresses, you don't want anything to be too fancy where it's not versatile enough to wear like every night. If you wanted to wear it every night, you need all of the items that you pack clothes wise to be so multifunctional and so versatile. So lay all your things out, and if there's maybe like a wee top or a wee skirt that only really go with one thing or are only really suitable for one occasion, get rid of it. Honestly, just get rid of it. You want everything to be able to be worn with each other and for them to be able to be worn on any occasion as well. You honestly do end up reaching for the same things very often. Like, I just found I wore my denim shorts, no word of a lie, about 5 days of the week. Because they're just comfy, they go with everything. They're not like too flimsy where if you're doing stuff, they'll like fly up and stuff. I just think have a good staple pair of denim shorts and that'll get you very far. But yeah, you want your clothes to work hard. And also, you need to bear in mind where you're going. There's no point in packing a load of wee teeny toady cropped vest tops, but you're actually going to be going to visit loads of temples and stuff where you have to cover your shoulders and tummy. Do you know what I mean? You kind of need to think about what's appropriate for where you're going to as well. Struggles with body image when out of exercise routine / eating out all the time. I completely get this because I think my kind of normal eating and exercising routine is very, like, it puts me in a good mindset. It helps my relationship with my body and therefore my body image. And yeah, I really get how being out of your kind of normal routine can throw that off. First of all, I think cut yourself some slack and, you know, give yourself some grace. You are traveling and you are meant to be enjoying yourself. And I really don't think anyone else around you is thinking badly of you. You're the only one thinking badly of yourself. So try and just treat yourself with a little bit more love and respect. I think things that help me are still just making sure I'm active. I think that pretty much comes naturally, though. I think when you're traveling, your step count is so high, isn't it? So that's kind of something that just happens anyway, that you're still active. Maybe trying to get in some exercise when you can. I think I'm going to bring a skipping rope and a resistance band. I mean, how often I'll actually get to use them, I really don't know. I'll maybe go on the odd run, depending on where we're at. We've also said, you know, if we're maybe in the more kind of chill places and there's a gym, we can maybe get like day passes for gyms and things. One thing as well that really helps me is making sure I'm drinking enough water, and I'm going to be bringing my greens powder as well because it's got all your vitamins and your probiotics and your prebiotics and your greens. So I think, you know, that combined with making sure I'm getting all my water and I don't have that kind of like, you know, when you just get that consistent holiday bloat, I think that will kind of help with that and will in turn help me just feel a little bit better. Wanting to travel, but my partner doesn't want to, what should I do? I would say do not let anyone get in the way of you wanting to travel, because who knows, you might not be with him in, like, sorry, that's a bit of a harsh reality, or maybe it's me being a bit negative, but you might not be with him in a few years' time, and then what? You've not traveled because they didn't want to. I just think do not let anyone affect you doing what you want to do, and if traveling's what you want to do, go and do it. They're going to be waiting for you at the end of it. What, you might only be away for like 3 months in the end. People have done a lot longer doing long distance, trust me. Let's say you do end up with this person for the rest of your life. You're always going to have this niggling feeling, this resentment towards them that you didn't get to go traveling. Whereas if you just go and do it, you'll be able to look back so fondly on those memories and still be with that person. But then if you do break up, you're going to be like, oh my God, I can't believe I didn't do that thing just because a man was telling me not to. How do you balance between booking enough stuff in advance but being flexible whilst you're there? So what I've done for literally every single one of my trips, because I hate to be tied down too much to, you know, having like real set in stone plans for the whole trip. I don't like to do that at all. I like to be able to be very flexible once I get there, for the route to be able to change, for me to stay longer in certain places or move on from certain places quicker if I don't like them. So what I tend to do is I book my flight there and I book my flight home, and I book if there's any like bigger flights I need to book. So for example, we're in Philippines and Vietnam. So in that case, we've booked our Vietnam to Philippines flight that is 30 days into the trip. So any kind of like bigger flights you would need to book, book them, but leave all the internal things, whether that be buses, trains, or internal flights, leave that all to do as you're going. And it just means you're not stuck to getting on any flights or any buses that you don't end up maybe wanting to get. Whereas in this case, we need that flight from Vietnam to Philippines, not only to make sure we get our visa to prove that we're leaving after the 30 days, but also to make sure we get a move on and get the places we need to cover in 30 days covered and make sure we get to the next country. Do you know what I mean? So sometimes it's better to have those kind of bigger ones booked. And then accommodation wise, we've only booked the first place just so that when we get off the plane, we've got somewhere to go to straight away, somewhere to put in Google Maps or somewhere to tell the taxi driver or whatever it may be, you know? You've got that like safety blanket of arriving somewhere and knowing you've got a destination. And that's what I've done with every trip, is just book the first place. And then I think once you get to the first place, you end up speaking to people and you get recommendations off of other people in hostels, and that's when the fun and the planning kind of begins. Now, I think it's really good to have a rough outline of, well, I think it's good to have a definite list, you know, places you definitely want to go to, places that if you were to look back on the trip and you missed out on them, you'd be raging at yourself. So have this list of definites and have like a rough route that will get you round all those definites, but be willing and flexible to throw other things into the mix based on other people's recommendations and them showing you photos and videos and all of that. Because honestly, I ended up finding out so many places that I didn't know existed. Like, I didn't see them online and I didn't read about them anywhere in any books or anything. And I didn't get those recommendations until I landed in Bangkok and spoke to other people traveling. And I know it seems daunting. Like, I know it does seem scary arriving somewhere not having much of a plan. But that's why it's good to just have your rough draft of a plan, you know? Do a little bit of research, look at some travel blogs. Say you've got like a month to spend in Thailand, look up 1 month in Thailand itinerary and just like have a flick through a good few blog posts of people giving their version of a 1 month itinerary and kind of pick and choose from the different ones what you think piques your interest and then create your own kind of version of that, but just be willing for it to change. Oh, this is a good question, you know? What is your number one priority when booking accommodation? So I tend to book either through Hostel World or booking.com, depending on what's just like bigger in the place that we're going to. Now, what I tend to look for is, well, first of all, good photos of the place. Second of all, reviews over 9, like 9 and up, or maybe like 8.9 and up. But yeah, around that kind of mark. I also look for recent good reviews. I think that's really important. You want to check them and make sure there's no reviews of like bed bugs or anything like that. I also want to see a lot of reviews because a lot of the time you'll see it's like 9.8 and then you'll click on it and it's actually got 1 to 3 reviews, which, you know, it's not much to go by. And also, who knows if those 3 people are legit. I think it's good to see like pages and pages of reviews. I like to see that a place looks like it's social in that it's got like nice communal spaces, maybe like a little bit of a rooftop or like a little communal kind of like coffee area or bar or like an outside place with bean bags. Just because I don't like the kind of ones that are really shut off from people where you don't meet anyone else. Now, I don't like staying in the likes of like party hostels and really kind of intense ones like that. That is like so far from the kind of place that I like. I really like to have my nice kind of calm, quiet space that's nice and friendly and still social, and people will have a drink at night, but then you can go to the party and then you can come back from it into your little safe haven, you know? So yeah, I kind of gauge it by the photos, the reviews, and then obviously budget comes into that as well, because usually you want something to be within your budget. So I'll usually filter it out based on those things. I think the key things as well that I look for within the reviews are that it's clean. The staff are really friendly and really helpful, because the staff are honestly like the staff of hostels make your life so much easier when you're traveling. I'm not joking you. I had to barely put in any effort on my first solo travel trip because they just help you with everything. They give you all the best recommendations. They help you book your buses. They help you book like your day tours, and they help you with like maybe renting a moped. A good hostel with good staff will be able to sort you out with absolutely everything, and they make such a difference to your trip. I literally don't know what I would have done without them. And I think because I have now recognized that, I really value making sure that it is like a good hostel that has good staff like that. And so I will always look for that in the reviews. I'm seeing a lot of questions regarding budgeting. Now, this is a tricky question to answer because obviously every country is different. Like, there's no point in me sitting here giving you specifics on... Well, I will give you specifics on where I'm going, but you have to bear in mind that that is specific to where I'm going and that's not going to apply. Let's say you're going traveling for a month in Australia. The same budget is not going to work for you. That's going to work for me in Southeast Asia. So what I did when I went on my first trip, because obviously I had no idea what to kind of base my budget off. Do you know what I mean? I'd been told it was cheap. I'd been told you could get like a meal for a pound or two. I'd been told the hostels like you could get for as low as £4 a night. However, day to day, you don't really know what you're going to spend. So I looked it up, just, you know, budget, daily budget or monthly budget for Southeast Asia, or you can get more specific and say, you know, for Thailand or whatever. You'll be able to find, like, generally there are good blog articles on this where people will give you a breakdown of different budgets. And what I mean by that is, so they'll give you like a low, an average, and a more kind of bougie traveler budget. I think I remember when I looked it up. Now, this was 6 years ago, we're talking. So I would say prices have increased a little bit. However, I do remember when I looked it up, it recommended £30 a day. But it did say if you're willing to spend a bit more and you've got a bit more in your budget and do some more activities that are quite high price, you know, things like scuba diving, skydiving, I don't know, those kind of like bigger expense activities, if you wanted to include more of them, then you could definitely up your budget to 40 or 50 a day. However, if you're like super, super, let's say you're doing like a year long trip around the world and you don't have much time to save for it, and when you're there, you need to budget like an absolute pro, then you could do Southeast Asia on £20 a day. And I did actually meet girls that were doing it on £20 a day. Now, what I will say about going down from the kind of average is that yes, it is doable. However, you end up missing out on things that you want to do for the sake of your budget. And personally, I would rather look back on a trip and think, I'm so glad I got to do everything I wanted to do. You know what I mean? Like, say, for example, you were sticking to the lower budget, and then it got to the end of the trip and you were like, I can't believe I've just spent all this money getting, because the flights are such a big expense, okay? So I've spent all this money getting to the other side of the world and I didn't just save up the extra, I don't know, £300 to allow for me to do the things I wanted to do. And now I'm going to have to actually spend the money to go back there another time. And that's like even more expensive. So I think 9 times out of 10, look, I completely get why people will be in situations where they just do have to budget lower. But I think you should aim to budget for the more mid-range thing and allow yourself to do all the things that you want to do. And yes, there's going to be things that you're going to have to cut back on. You're not going to get to do the bougie yoga retreat, and you're not going to get to maybe do a dive every other day. But like, that's quite unrealistic. Do you know what I mean? I think a more mid-range one is a lot more doable while still meaning you get to enjoy yourself. So yeah, as I said, I kind of went off of the £30 a day on my first trip, which accumulates, well, over the course of 30 days, that's £900. So I basically budgeted for £1,000 a month. Now, we actually have upped our budget a little bit for this trip. We've decided we're going to budget for £1,500 per month. So when you work that out per day, that's £50 a day, which actually sounds significantly more when you think about it on your daily budget. But then overall, it being £500 more per month, I don't know. I mean, I know £500 is still a big chunk of money, but it doesn't seem like overly daunting to have to save an extra £500. And basically the only reason we're doing that is because, well, first of all, I do know that prices have increased slightly. Have they increased to the point where you now have to do a £50 a day budget? No, absolutely not. But I do know that they have increased a little bit. Second of all, we want to stay in private rooms everywhere we go. I don't really fancy staying in any dorms just because I am going to have all my camera equipment. We're both going to have laptops. I'm going to have my mic. I just don't need that extra worry of being in a dorm and having all that stuff with me. I'd rather feel a lot safer, be able to lock my door when I leave and know that no one can get to my things. Because although, yes, 9 times out of 10, you have like lockers and things in dorms, you generally can't fit all of your stuff in. Like, you can't put your whole backpack in a locker. You kind of just have to put your valuables in it, and then you've got to take out all your valuables to put it in the locker, and it's just a whole ordeal. So it just is comforting to me to know that I'll be in private rooms. And as a result of that, it will be more expensive. We're talking the difference of, so I would say in general, in Vietnam, I honestly don't think I spent over £4 a night in the hostels that I stayed in, maybe maximum £5 a night. In Thailand, especially in more touristy places like Koh Phi Phi and those kinds of places, you could maybe be paying closer to £10 a night in the dorms. However, with doing the private rooms, it's probably going to be closer to the £10 to £15 mark each. And that's every night. And to be honest, I'm sure there's times it will be closer to the £20 mark. So it is a significant increase in accommodation. And that's kind of why, ultimately, that we're upping our daily budget to account for the increase in price of that. And on top of that, we've also decided that we're going to treat ourselves to one nice accommodation in each place. I don't mean each place as in literally every stop, sorry. I mean each place as in both countries. So like, once in Vietnam and once in Philippines, we'll maybe have a little one or two night stay in a bit of a nicer hotel, maybe with like a nice balcony on the beach, kind of spa resort vibes. I don't know. We'll see. Don't know how bougie we'll go with it. And we'll still be keeping it to our budget. So nothing too OTT. But I just thought it'd be nice to have like a little nice one to look forward to in each place. And again, I just don't want to miss out on anything. Like, I've been looking forward to going to both of these places for so long now, like since before COVID. So it would be such a shame to look back and think, oh, I wish I did this, I wish I did that. So yeah, I'm going to make sure I do all the dives I want to do. Although I'm probably going to have to do a little refresher course to dive again because it's been that long now. I wouldn't really feel comfortable going straight into like a scuba dive without having a little refresher course and kind of know my shit again. I think they do require you do that if you haven't dived in like a year though. But yeah, I want to do that. I want to go on all the boat trips. I want to swim with the whale sharks. I want to do the island trips and rent mopeds and go trekking in the mountains in North Vietnam and Sapa. Not that these things are like majorly expensive. I just want to experience it all. So that's the reason we're upping the budget to 50 a day. But that's not to say you can't do it on a lower budget. Oh, and obviously it goes without saying, but that's an average. So there's going to be days where you literally, let's say you've got a chill beach day, you don't go out that night. So you literally only spend a tenner on your accommodation and £5 by the time you've got all your meals and water. But then you've got your kind of big expense days when you're doing the activities and stuff. So it all averages out. Okay, I will leave it there for the travel Q&A. I do have so many more questions from you guys. So if you enjoyed this one and you do want me to do another travel Q&A, I can definitely record a second one while I'm out there. But yeah, just let me know if that's something you'd be interested in. If you enjoyed this week's episode, don't forget to give me a little 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Share it with your friends, share it with your family on your Instagram stories, in your TikToks. As always, thank you all so much for your continued love and support in the podcast. It means the absolute world to me. I love you guys so much, and I'll speak to you in next week's episode. Bye.